if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm going to the beach.
Thank you for joining us again as we discuss two more episodes of Sliders. We're into season three.
Woo! Yes, we are. For better or for worse.
We're going to find out, that's for sure.
Yes.
Okay, so this week we're discussing Double Cross and rules of the game. So beginning with our first episode, Double Cross, written by Tony Blake and Paul Jackson, directed by Richard Compton. This originally aired September 27th of 1996.
Hey, my man. How much for a hot dog with chili and cheese?
What are you, a comedian? What'll it be, green or yellow?
Geo mash. What is that?
What planet are you from?
Sir, do you know where we could get a hot dog?
In the dictionary.
You know, it seems like everywhere we go to, we have trouble with the food. Do you know what would happen if I ate that stuff? I have a very sensitive digestive tract.
Our sliders arrive in a subway tunnel, and after a narrow escape from an oncoming train, they find themselves in a world seemingly devoid of cars and high prices on gasoline, people using human-powered transport devices such as bikes and skateboards, food is at a premium, and the leading alternative is a product known as GeoMash. Remy is quickly swept away by a beautiful fan, while our remaining sliders are suddenly chased down by several people on motorcycles. They are quickly caught, but one of the riders, Logan St. Clair, comes forth to welcome them, calling them by the name Sliders. Logan has apparently developed ways to track objects that travel through wormholes, and while they have been working on sliding technology, it hasn't been perfected yet. Indeed, Logan is surprised to see Arturo, who in this world died recently by prematurely trying to jump through a sliding vortex that malfunctioned. Quinn and Arturo agree to help Logan perfect her sliding equipment, and she in return agrees to let them use her lab to help them try and find a way home. Quinn and Logan develop a close relationship despite Wade and Arturo's hesitations. Upon going to the Dominion Hotel, Arturo learns that in this world, his double was having an affair with Logan, going against what Logan had said about barely knowing his double. They go to dead Arturo's wife and explain the alternate dimension issue, trying to find out what actually happened. After some sleuthing, they discover evidence that Logan pushed dead Arturo through the vortex when he found out the company's true plans for sliding, raid parallel universes for their natural resources. Meanwhile, Remy is living it up with Monique, the heiress to the paperless toilet empire, being wined and dined and apparently becoming engaged. The two retire to her home, and while a good time was had by all, Remy discovers that Monique may be slightly unbalanced when he happens upon her altar to all things Remy. This is further compounded when she comes into the room wearing a wedding dress before being stopped by a very large and very angry boyfriend. Remy flees, eventually having to resort to riding on top of a train to get back to our trio for the slide. Arturo confronts Quinn about Logan's guilt, and the missing Wade reappears and suggests Quinn still go to the lab and see if their home coordinates have been found. After another talk with dead Arturo's wife, it's revealed that in this world, Arturo invented sliding. Wade slips up by reasoning it makes sense that his double would have invented it just like Arturo did, which outs her as an alternate Wade. Together, Quinn and Arturo find the evidence of Logan's plans and bargain for Wade's release, which turns bad as a fight ensues, a vortex is created, and Logan once again pushes an Arturo through it. Luckily, Arturo is able to slide through successfully without harm because Quinn had discovered the correct coordinates for re-entry. He then sabotages the computer program while Arturo reappears, armed, and rescues him and Wade as they escape to meet Remy at the Dominion Hotel and slide into the next dimension, realizing that because Logan switched their timer's geographic stabilizer, they will now be landing anywhere between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Because Logan still has the ability to track them, she shows up in the next dimension, demanding Quinn give her the re-entry coordinates so that she can slide objects and return them without being destroyed. Quinn enters the numbers into her timer, throws the timer into the vortex, and Logan is pulled in, trying to shoot Wade, but the bullet is pulled in as well. Quinn reveals that he did not enter the correct numbers, condemning Logan to sliding randomly, just like our sliders.
Logan, how exactly did you track our wormhole?
It's not the wormhole I tracked, but the objects traveling through it. I developed an eight-dimensional echoing process that resonates whenever a photon trail is created between dimensions.
Photons, of course.
Of course. This is incredible, to actually meet people from another dimension.
Miss Sinclair, how is it that you know my name? Was my double associated with this project?
Actually, he was. I didn't know him that well. He was kind of a loner. He died two nights ago. See, we haven't perfected sliding yet, and apparently he couldn't wait. He attempted the slide anyway.
He did? How on?
I guess.
Okay, well, let's have some trivia on Double Cross.
Okay, for this one, there was a lot more with that guy who was walking around with Logan, you know, in the background, kind of. That was supposedly, I guess, Logan's boss. His name was Fane, F-A-Y-N-E. And in the original script, he had a lot more to do. There was a lot more with him sort of bossing Logan around, saying, find out, you know, like the episode started with them actually looking at the wormhole on the screen first and him saying, go find out where this is, you know, go find this wormhole. And then there was more stuff with him later instead of just him showing up and grabbing Wade's hand and things like that. He was more of a presence in the original script. And this time, like in the actual episode himself, he's kind of just extraneous. He doesn't do too much. There was a few extra lines about a McTato, which was a McDonald's potato for $99. It was like a value meal they saw on the, in the background. They made a comment on it. Yeah, I was like, the McTato, $99 value. those little things are what I like when they put those in there, you know, because they're fun, you know. There was a bunch of people in line, if you remember, when they were trying to escape. And Quinn goes up the middle and throws like a duffel bag, you know, a big backpack at someone, at the riders, the motorcycle riders. Mm. If you were wondering why those people were standing in line, and if you look at it, they all have big bags of something. Originally, there was supposed to be another scene in there about those people, and they were actually in line waiting for a washing machine. And at the very top, there was actually supposed to be a maitre d' who takes reservations for washing machines because it's at such a premium in this world. So the sliders were supposed to be talking to him or something like that, and there was like an interaction. And then later on when they run up, it makes sense that the people are there with these big bags that he could throw at the motorcycle rider. Again, that would have been a neat thing to throw in there, I thought.
Yeah.
There were more scenes with Logan and Quinn flirting, going out to eat together and connecting on that other weird level. They cut those. It's just extra stuff. See, also, originally, Monique knew that the gold crown, I'd pawn my gold crown for you. She knew that wasn't a real song, but was using it to see if Remy was an imposter. So when he tries to sing it, you know, she's like, I don't know what that is. You're an imposter, you know? And then her boyfriend comes in and they both chase after Remy instead of just him. So it was a little different take on her. And we were supposed to have Pavel back. Pavel was supposed to make an appearance as one of those bike rickshaw drivers. Because you've seen him in the episode itself, someone driving the bike around with a seat in the back. And in the script, it didn't say Pavel specifically, but it said a rickshaw driver, and then in capital letters, with accent, you know, and
right.
The implication was that Pavel was supposed to be back. For whatever reason, that didn't work out, but he had a couple extra lines, like he was going to have some lines with Remy. He was going to take Remy to get away from the big boyfriend, and he, like, overcharges him. He charges him, like, $150 for the rickshaw ride, and Remy's like, $150 for a ride? You know, and he's like, $50 for the ride, $100 for getting you away from King Kong. Something like that. It was really good. It was perfect for Pavel. And then finally, there was a note that said Tracy had plans for Logan to appear again, and eventually she was going to join the Sliders on a couple slides for a couple episodes. And then eventually she was going to be chasing them, and then she would join them. And then eventually sacrifice herself for them in some way. So, you know, she was going to be a great addition to the show. She's a great character. We'll talk about her later. But Fox did not think that she was hot enough. And so they axed her. They said, no more of her. Get rid of her.
Well, that's interesting, considering where we're going to go after about midway of this season.
Exactly. I mean, I admit that Logan, I thought she was cute. I was like, oh, wow, she's attractive. You know, like I wouldn't mind seeing more of her. I mean, in the episode, not actually more of her. Although I'm okay with that, too. Anyway, let's go on. That's enough trivia.
Don't look so surprised. You knew I could track wormholes. Now give me the re-entry coordinates I need to return objects without burning them up. I have 30 seconds on this world. Import the coordinates I need to slide back safely, or I kill her.
Don't do it, Mr. Mallory. She won't dare shoot. Without those return coordinates, she's stuck here, and heaven knows what they do to killers on this world.
Don't test me. I'll take my chance with a good lawyer.
It's done.
We'll see. Let's go!
I gave you what you wanted!
I have to make sure! Come on!
No, Logan. This time you're gonna have to trust me.
No! Right coordinates?
No. I programmed a set for another dimension.
So she's out there somewhere lost like us.
Yeah, but she said something about tracking wormholes. We're gonna run into her again?
Let's get into our discussion of the episode.
All right, so now this is the start of season three right here, even though it did not air first. There's some different things that have happened now that we're into season three. So first of all, we are no longer in Vancouver shooting. Season three, they moved the shooting to California, to Los Angeles. That changes things a little bit. And if you notice, the Sliders look a little different, especially Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the short hair. He's a little bit, he looks more Hollywood in this episode going forward. And then you've got Arturo, who looks like, his hair is so long. Like, it's very long, and he's not wearing his, like, suit and tie type thing. He's got, like, an unbuttoned shirt, which, not a big deal, but it's a change that I noticed, you know, right away. Even back when the show first aired, I was like, well, things look really different here. So, yeah, it's something I was like, what's going on back then? And then when I found out, oh, yeah, they switched to L.A., so weather's different. They made some changes about that. The theme song is also different. It's a little bit more, upbeat, catchy. The original two theme songs, if you look at them, they're kind of like a little bit harder rockish, you know, not totally like guitars and everything, but they just seemed a little bit more, like there was sound effects in them. There was more just driving force to it. It just felt different to me. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Oh, no, I definitely noticed it, especially Quinn and Arturo's look. The main thing I notice about Arturo, I guess aside from what he's wearing, is the beard. His beard seems a lot more scraggly, you know, like he's actually been, you know, out getting in these crazy adventures for a couple of years now.
It's so weird that they did that, made him look scruffy while they cleaned up Quinn. And they cleaned up Wade, too. Both of them look less misfits. They look so like typical Hollywood star now.
Yeah, and on the opposing side too, you got Remy, who shows up wearing this like, I don't know, like shiny suit, like a silk suit or something.
Exactly. That was very typical of like season one Remy right there. That's what I thought when he showed up in that suit. It's like, man, that's like season one all over again.
Yeah, so they're kind of mismatching like where they're going with it. You think like all of them would be, I guess, more like Arturo, you know, maybe a bit worn, a bit more like survivalist or something like that.
You know, I like the idea of what they did with Arturo with the beard and everything, and the fact that he's not wearing like the bow tie, you know, like he usually does, or looking all put together was good, I think. Like you said, it looks like he's actually been on these adventures. But then Quinn and Wade sort of contrast that, even Remy contrasts that, because they're also, you know, they look like they're put together and dressed up and, you know, ready to go out.
It's interesting that this one should have been first. Of course, it actually aired second. We've got a bit of a switcheroo here. We're talking about the second episode first and the first episode second, the way it should be. And the fact that they actually slide into what is San Angeles, a combination of San Francisco and Los Angeles, considering that they've moved filming to Los Angeles. And then, of course, the outcome at the end where this geographic stabilizer is going to place them anywhere between San Francisco and Los Angeles. So it's just kind of mixing it up a bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely.
So you can understand why this episode should be first.
There was one other change that they made in season three, and this was staff changes behind the scenes, which since they moved to Los Angeles, the reason was because Fox wanted to keep a closer hold on the show. Like, they wanted to look over it more, because when they were in Vancouver, you know, Tracy Torme, he said in an interview, there was a lot of things that they wanted to do that they were able to do because they were so far away. So they were able to slip things in, and they couldn't change it because it was too late. Now that they are closer to Fox, they can keep an eye on things and make sure things go the way that Fox wanted them to go. And what they did was they promoted certain people on the staff, not Tracy Torme, but Fox did. They promoted certain people on the staff that agreed with Fox's outlooks and their thoughts and beliefs. And one of those people was the infamous David Peckinpah. So he's the one that most Sliders fans they look to as like, this is the guy that just took it all down, you know? And apparently he and John Rhys Davies did not have a very good working relationship either. So you could see how things are going to go for the rest of the season, why things happened the way they did. So the move to Los Angeles changed so many things in so many ways, as we're going to see as we go through.
But I guess getting into the episode proper, they slide into a subway tunnel, and it really takes a while for them to get a clue here, really. Like, they're staring at it, and like Remy gets trapped and everything, and it's just like, man, it really just takes a while for them to realize that they're in a subway tunnel. Like, even Quinn sort of has to like lean down and touch the track, and I'm like, isn't the fact that you're on a track like enough information?
Exactly. Yeah, I thought, like, when he did that, actually, what I thought he was going to do, which I thought would have been really, really good, I thought he was going to go and put his ear onto the track, which would be a nice homage to when he was in Stand By Me, you know? I thought that would have been perfect. Why? They should have done that. But, yeah, and Remy getting caught in the track or whatever, I thought, man, it's like, this really, like, he looks like season one Remy. This is a season one Remy ploy by getting him trapped and complaining about his new boots and everything. I was like, I hope we're not going backwards, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But at least the idea for the world is a good idea. This world that has massively depleted resources. Fuel's expensive. The only food you can get is this geomash stuff. Well, at least, you know, on the streetcars. And all these alternate means of transport, you know, you've got businessmen on skateboards and Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great aesthetic. I love it. It's very LA.
Yeah, and they did a good job of establishing it too. Like, it wasn't like just totally like in your face, but you saw all these things going on like off to the side in the background. So it was really well done.
And then, of course, they're going to set up actually going to LA with Remy and Monique the Psycho.
We already mentioned this, but yeah, Remy, I have this in the notes, but Remy does seem a little bit like season one here. You know, going off, getting picked up by a woman and being all into it, and then going off and having his own little adventure, which, you know, someone says it in Messages in Time, but this is very reminiscent of that episode where he got picked up before and went off with a woman for the whole episode. Back in, was it season one, I think? Maybe it was season two.
Was it the Summer of Love when he has the wife?
No, it was the weaker sex where the guys were running, where Arturo was running for mayor, and Remy was just off with that girl who was taking advantage of
him. Right, okay, yeah, gotcha. You know, the thing that threw me off was that he sort of comes, like, up to the other sliders, and he's like, oh my god, this girl, she wants to take me to L.A. on her private jet, and blah, blah, blah. And then we find out later that we're in San Angeles. There is right. No L.A. So did she actually, like, is she that much of a psycho that she still refers to L.A. as L.A., even though it's all San Angeles?
I would say so. I think that's the best way to explain it.
Yeah.
She's just nuts.
Yeah. But I, at the same time, I just thought, it's a bit of a continuity error there.
We get to the best female character of the show here, Logan St. Clair.
Hmm.
Which, St. Clair, by the way, if you check the end credits, that's the production company.
St. Clair Entertainment. And she's an interesting character as it goes in. I mean, she works for this company, Prototronics. We know she's very smart and she's working on sliding. And in fact, mm-hmm. she tracks them down because she can track wormholes.
Oh, wait, hang on. Doesn't track wormholes. She tracks the photon trail that they leave between wormholes. You know, which of course Quinn says, oh yeah, photons, of course. It's almost like crossing the streams. You know, it's like, oh yeah, crossing the streams, of course. Because she says specifically, oh, I don't track wormholes. I track the photon trails between the wormholes, you know, which I make a point of because at the end of the episode, she says, oh, I guess you forgot I track wormholes. What? No, you didn't say that earlier, Logan. Well, come on.
I guess at the end of the day, this photon trails things just means that she can track wormholes.
I know. I just like when I heard, like, when she said specifically, I don't track wormholes, I was like, wait, photons, right? So I looked it up. See, doing my research. I looked it up, and apparently human beings do emit photons. They're called biophotons, which are ultra weak photons, and they're not visible to the naked eye. You need like specialized equipment, you know, like she would have. But yeah, when I was like, okay, so she can track those, but why wouldn't you just track the vortex? That seems like it'd be a lot easier to track than biophotons, which every person in the world emits. If every person in the world emits these biophotons, why would you track those rather than a giant vortex appearing in your universe? You know? So I just thought it was odd that they chose to specifically say in the beginning here, oh, I don't track wormholes. I track the biophotons, or I track the photons. Because they may, it was like not just a throwaway line, because even Quinn says, oh, of course, photons. Why didn't I think of that? It's like, well, it's not a good idea.
But she's working on sliding, and she can't mm-hmm. quite get it right.
No.
It's burning up all these probes that she's sending through. And indeed, the professor on their world apparently slid regardless of this information.
And that doesn't make sense at all to us even.
No. And she doesn't actually have wormholes like the ones that our sliders have.
Mm-mm. They're red. Well, they're orangish red.
Yeah. They're not quite like the Cro-Mag ones. They're kind of like an orangey yeah. color, and they're a bit misshapen. Right. They're not an actual circle.
Right. And that's why I was like, when I saw it first, like, I'm going back, it's like, yeah, they're a little bit more orangish than they are red, but it made me think, I wonder if there's like, they could have had like a whole link with the Cro-Mags there, you know, using with her equipment or something like that too, you know, because it was so similar to what the Cro-Mags had.
But that would be too easy. Instead, they throw a curveball at us, and it turns out that Logan is Quinn, but female.
Right.
Which is super weird because
it's very weird.
The guy, whatever his name was, background guy, background evil guy.
Bane.
He's like, oh, he's your double, Logan. You need to get close to him, make him stick around. And her immediately, she goes to, I need to seduce him.
Exactly.
Ew. And then to top it all off, the Arturo of that world was sleeping with Logan.
Yeah, her standards are very, very low,
I think. Yeah, I don't know. This whole little thing just seems a little gross.
Like that, definitely. It was like, get the ew factor there. I was just, I don't know, about her being Quinn's double just seems odd to me. Like, I understand what they're saying. It's just the difference between an X and Y chromosome. But it just seems like she's, I know what they were trying to do by saying she's his twin. You know, she actually is this world's version of Quinn. It just, to me, it just seemed odd that it would be a woman.
Yeah. And they do just, you know, like they do so often, they just hand wave it. You know, Arturo just goes,
right,
it's the difference between an X and a Y chromosome, Mr. Mallory.
Exactly. But I remember thinking like, well, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, I suspend disbelief, you know. Whatever. I go with it. Because it's a good story anyway.
And they keep up the continuity a bit in that Quinn's father had died. Here, Logan's father had also died. Her mother had remarried. She took her stepfather's last name. So that's why she becomes Logan St. Clair, even though she was born Logan Mallory.
I mean, technically, Quinn could be a girl's name too. So she should be Quinn St. Clair. You know, if it's really going to be her double. But then that would have given it away.
Yeah, that's playing the card too early. But, you know, Arturo and Wade are quite suspicious of everything that's going on at Prototronics. I love that Arturo is, you know, he's still playing that card of, like, you know, really, should we be getting involved? You know, should we be giving, you know, to the extent of actually giving sliding information to people we don't know? But, and of course, it turns out that Logan did kill Arturo.
Right. It's always good to have security cameras around.
Yeah.
You know, you never know when they're going to come in handy as a plot device.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, every evil genius needs to make a video of their evil plan for people to find, you know.
Exactly.
Wade's computer skills come in handy. And she tracks down this evil genius video.
And you never know. And like, this is just a in general thing, but even in other movies and TV shows, hacking is always done by like banging on the keyboard. You know, they're always clip-clopping away, like, just crazily. Like, the mouse hardly ever comes into play when you're trying to click on things. No, they do it all by keyboard, you know, movement. Do some realistic hacking there, I think. Yeah, I guess if you're using, like, I don't know, a terminal or something like that, I guess it looks better.
I guess moving on to, you know, a little side thing here with the Dominion Hotel.
Oh, yeah. It's quite upgraded, isn't it?
It is. It's quite swish on this world.
Yeah, it's like a 5-star resort now. You know, they got a little, you know, it's like the big glass doors and the rotating doors or whatever, and they got a maitre d' and all this other. It's like, it's huge.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like very classy.
Yeah, and you know? Well, of course, no Gomez Calhoun to be found.
No more Gomez Calhoun. Instead, we get Elston Diggs, which. You know, like even when I saw back in the day, I was like, who's this guy? Because they gave him like lines specifically. Like he had a lot to do. You know,
yeah.
Like not like as far as the story itself goes, but he had a lot to say and contribute. And I know he does show up again a couple of times, right?
Yeah, he's ostensibly replacing Calhoun.
So I was just like, I remember back in the day, I was thinking, well, who's this guy? Because he just seemed like, I don't know, like I liked Gomez Calhoun. I liked the actor who plays him, Will Sasso. So I kind of miss having him around. And I read something about how Tracy Torme specifically wrote Elston into the script. Like he wanted to make Elston one of those big recurring characters that would, you know, change with each episode going forward and whatnot. And I'm thinking, but you have a bunch of those already. You know, you have a bunch of those. What's so special about Elston Diggs that you need to include him so badly that we can't have Pavel, or we can't have Ross J. Kelly or Gomez Calhoun? Why can't we have those characters back that we've already established? So there's no answer for that. But yeah, he for some reason, Tracy Torme was big on Elston Diggs for whatever reason.
Yeah, and for the most part, he actually plays into Remy's story because Remy gets taken out to L.A., or, you know, I guess what is supposed to be L.A. in this world. And he's with Monique, and Elston comes up to Monique, and he's like, girl, what are you doing hanging out with the crying man? And that's where you kind of get the first inkling that she's crazy, because she says that they're engaged. And then it moves on to him at Monique's place, and, you know, it just turns out that she's completely batshit crazy for Remy. Yeah. So it's an interesting side story, even if it is sort of doing that old Remy thing that they used to do, taking him for his own little crazy side adventures.
Like I said, it just felt like, oh man, I hope that they just don't revert him back to goofy, silly, you know, Remy again. I like the way that they were going with him the last couple episodes and last season.
Yeah, absolutely. But I, you know, getting back to the main story, I really like that, you know, Arturo catches up with his wife on this world. Mm-hmm. And at some point, Prototronics does a switcheroo with Wade and gets her right. double on this world to sort of fill in for her.
That was a neat thing that I did not really expect. I didn't expect that to happen. And I didn't really catch on to it until, like, there was a little inkling when she started being a little snippy, you know, when she first appeared. But I didn't think much about it until she slipped up herself.
Yeah, and it's kind of odd, really. Like, did they just pull this world's weight out of nowhere, give her all the information she would need to know, bar, you know, what they didn't know, and she just rolled with it? Like, what?
Yeah, I think so, you know, because she wouldn't have been on their payroll or anything, because she would have been no one, you know, on this world to them. So I think they just looked her up and said, hey, we're going to pay you, you know, like this insane amount of money because, you know, like she probably doesn't have money to get like the good food and everything that everyone else would, you know, the rich people would have. She would just have the geomash or whatever. So they probably convinced her with money, I would imagine.
Mm. Or water.
Or water. Yeah,
I thought that was the big thing about like a world with like very little resources. The Prototronics headquarters had like fountains everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
I was like, geez, you know. And it's like we're saying in the deleted parts, you know, where you would have people lining up to use a washing machine. Mm-hmm. They've just got like waterfalls and fountains everywhere.
That comes up again later in the messages in time. Someone had mentioned what the deal is with all that.
Nice.
So we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
But, you know, it all comes to a head. They decide that they're not going to help him anymore. They figured out the evil plan. At this point, Logan just goes insane.
Yeah.
A crazy bitch.
And it was good, too. It was really well done, though. You know, it's like there was a little bit, like here and there, you could see that she's a little bit intense. You know, and it finally just turns a corner there near the end. She's just off, you know, yeah. Really well done, I thought.
Yeah. And they'd set up the whole geographic stabilizer as well earlier in the episode,
which is something that we've wondered about before. Like, why can't they just slide, you know, just like, you know, into like a building or whatever? But a geographic stabilizer, maybe that has to do with why they always land safely, relatively. On land and not like up in the sky or.
Yeah, exactly. Like you open the vortex at one spot on this earth, it's probably going to open in relatively the same geographic location on the next earth and probably right. close to the ground as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, we're going to get into in the next episode, but, mm-hmm. You know, that's still to come. But, you know, she follows them to the next world. Again, we get Elston Diggs, who's Jamaican mm-hmm. now.
And I don't know, like, it seemed like a really cheesy Jamaican accent as well.
Yeah.
I was not believing that. Like, that sounded like an accent that I would do. You know, like, oh, man, what are you doing, man? It's like, bad. Bad accent. Yeah. Sorry, Elston.
But it was a great ending, I think. You know, she pretty much holds them at gunpoint or threatens to kill Wade. And Quinn needs to fix her timer for her so she can use it. And get back safely as well. He mucks around with it and then throws it through the vortex. So she has no choice but to just either chase after it or stay there with them. So that was cool, you know, and he screwed her over. Awesome.
Yeah. See, I liked this because, like, to me, like, see, I was a fan. Some of my favorite episodes of Quantum Leap were with the evil Leaper.
I haven't seen a lot of Quantum Leap.
Not to spoil it, but there is an evil Leaper that they do a couple episodes with as well. That becomes a recurring character. And this reminded me of that because it's like one side is doing good. The other side is trying to do bad. So it was really kind of cool. So when this happened in Sliders, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, she's going to be out there. Not only do we have the Cro-Mags who are supposed to be a recurring character and, you know, chasing them. Now we have this other girl, Logan, who's going to be chasing them as well to get the right coordinates. You know, maybe at some point we'll see a Cro-Mag Logan team up. It's going to be epic. What a season finale that will be. But no.
No. And it's like I said, it's interesting that they would set up Logan here and then not bring her back, considering where they're going to go after the halfway point of this season, after a certain two-parter.
Oh, if they had brought Logan back for that, oh, I would have been okay. I would have been fine with it. I mean, I would have missed, you know, the absence of course, John Rhys Davies. But, you know, having Logan in there would have made for just, I think it would have been a great thing for the stories going forward.
But as it stands, we never hear from Logan again. Spoiler alert for the remainder of the show.
as with a lot of the bad things that happen in Sliders, we have one thing to blame, and simply Fox.
Yeah.
And now it's time for another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory.
I don't make deals,
and I don't fix computers.
This has been another episode of Tech Talk with Quinn Mallory. All right, moving on to our second episode today. The episode is Rules of the Game, written by Joseph Anderson, directed by Oscar L. Costo. This originally aired September 20th of 1996.
To win the event, a player must place his medallion in the obelisk on level 5. We have a great assortment of booby traps, heat-seeking androids, and mind-blowing mayhem guaranteed to kill a few of you in a very entertaining fashion. And remember, any key you find or capture will admit you to a safe haven for a rest period. Just look for the big arch and signs that will lead you there. So let me conclude by saying that I and 228 million fans out there want to say, we hope to see you at the beach.
How do we get to the beach?
Didn't they tell you?
Well, perhaps we missed something.
You make it to the finish line, and you'll have enough money to go anywhere you want. The beach, the mountains, name it. You better grab some gear.
This time, the sliders exit the vortex and land on a plane in mid-flight. A fellow passenger makes references to going to the beach and that Arturo seems a bit out of shape for the games. Within a few minutes, a loud explosion occurs, revealing that the stewardess and pilots appear to have gone missing. Quinn and Arturo attempt to bring the plane down safely, only to discover it's just a simulation, not a real plane. As everyone exits the cabin, an announcer fills the sliders in on everything they need to know, namely that they have just entered level 1 of a game where they must grab some gear, fight their way through a city complete with booby traps and dangerous hazards, and win by placing their team's medallion in the obelisk on level 5. The finish line. While the sliders might like to stay non-involved, the choice is removed due to the simulator beginning to burn up. Immediately, the sliders learn that in order to survive in this game, they will need to be wary of everyone and everything as a sprinkler system has been rigged to shoot at them. The world itself has been embroiled in a civil war for years, and to help entertain the people, the government developed the game, played in a walled-off area of the city. As they explore the war zone around them, Arturo becomes hit by a beam that blinds him. While they manage to find a safe haven, gaining access via a key received from another player in the game, they are soon attacked by androids and separated from each other. The professor implores Remy to leave him behind and come back for him later. Remy tries to keep his spirits up, sharing a story about an old Navy friend who overcame diversity, but to no avail, as Arturo would rather die than have to rely on others to help him. As Arturo tries to leave Remy, he realizes that he cannot make it by himself and finally decides that he must ask for help. While Wade and Quinn navigate through various booby traps, they eventually come across the woman who gave them the key earlier and they join forces. After an extended shootout, the girl is shot down while standing still looking at Quinn. The sliders develop a plan using CO2 to render themselves invisible to the heat-seeking androids and get to the finish line in order to put her disc into the obelisk, ensuring her family gets the game's winnings.
I suggest the only way we're going to find out what kind of world we've landed in is by keeping up with those people.
What is going on here?
That is a car bomb. This game is being paid for very high stakes. Mr. Brown?
Whoa, 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 guys, what are you doing?
Well, if it's a bomb, we're going to have to disarm it.
What do you know about bombs?
Girl, in the Navy, you learn a lot about everything. Hey, Professor, what are the wires coming out of this coil?
That isn't a coil, Mr. Brown. This is a diesel engine. They don't have coils. How much time did you spend on that course?
Well, I took a couple of classes before I left on a USO tour.
Okay, so a little bit of trivia here.
So originally they were going to start in an airport. The simulation was going to be in an airport that was simulated, and they were going to get on board the plane. So it was a much bigger simulation originally, and probably cut for budget reasons, because to simulate a whole airport is a lot more than just simulating the inside of a plane. So,
yeah,
you know, let's cut that. In this one, Arturo was acting like he was the captain, which it his actions, like if you read the script over at dimensionsofcontinuity.com under their Lost and Found section, it reminded me of that later episode where Arturo gets a scan or something and learns that he's dying, so he starts just living life to the fullest.
Right.
That's this episode originally, it sort of made me feel like that's what he was doing here, because he was acting as captain, sort of like giving orders to the rest of the team. You know, he was pushing buttons on one booby trap without consulting them because he knew what the answer was to this particular puzzle. He was the one who was inspecting for the bomb and then jumping into the car, into the Jeep, just to try the key, you know, like without consulting, you know, with no pausing, just jumping in, let me try this, and, you know, being safe. You know, he was very arrogant in the original script. Like he didn't want to talk with the others about, you know, what should we do next? Should we go here? Should we go there? He was just saying, let's go this way. Let's do that. So a lot more arrogant in the original script. There was a lot of other booby traps that they had in the original script. If you notice my synopsis for the first episode compared to this one, very different. This synopsis went very, very quickly, because a lot of it, it's action and it's just booby traps that they're trying to get through. And they had, you know, like that first episode had a lot going on. It was a really great story. There was some really good alt history and everything. This one was just so quick. This is an action episode, this one here. And they had a lot more plans for more booby traps. They had a talking gargoyle logic puzzle that they were going to be solving. Sort of like they got to this one section and there was two gargoyles, and one of them says, I always tell the truth, I always lie, you know, and they had to figure out which door to go through. It's like that old puzzle.
Like Labyrinth, you know? Or something.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like that. Exactly, yeah. I knew I had seen something like that before. There was supposed to be a big swarm of like killer bats that showed up. There was going to be a river of acid. They were supposed to walk across a narrow beam high above the ground, like between two buildings. We were going to have giant rats. And we were going to have a killer jukebox that shoots circular saw blades out of them. Like it was like instead of the records being in there, there were circular saw blades.
Like a bad Stephen King adaptation. Of
yeah.
The killer jukebox.
Exactly. And then finally, at the end, it was pretty much the same, except when they put the disc in the obelisk, you saw a picture of Nikki with her team on the screen. Originally, it was supposed to be a picture of Nikki with her family. It would have been her and her husband and her two kids on the screen. So a little more to her. And then the androids, for some reason in the original script, you know, after they put the obelisk in, or put the disc in the obelisk, the androids continue shooting at the sliders as they slide. Even though the game is over, they were still shooting at them, which I think it's just like, we got to have more action to end this. You know, we have to have them escape. Just, you know, almost the threat of death still has to remain. So, yeah, there's that.
Stay where you are. Do not move.
We might set it off.
Set what off?
Look over your shoulder.
Gwen?
All right. If it hasn't gone off yet, it's got to be triggered by your weight. You must not move. How much do you weigh?
What?
I need to put enough weight on the trigger pad so it thinks that you're still standing on it. How much do you weigh?
100 pounds. Okay, maybe 104. I had a lot of pizza last week.
All right. Well, getting into our discussion of this episode. So the sliders slide onto a plane. You know, it's like I was saying, it's interesting that these episodes should have been in the order that we're watching them now.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the last episode, they did set up that geographic stabilizer.
Exactly.
So suddenly it makes you think, oh, maybe they did slide somewhere like really high in the air all of a sudden. Exactly. Like that's kind of freaky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as it, you know, it's revealed to actually not be a plane. It's this simulator for the game.
Right.
Cool reveal. I really like this opening.
I understand why they put this episode first. You know, like, I think Double Cross was the better episode by far. But, like, in Fox's eyes, this episode is just all, like, you know, action movie. You know, it's that's what it is. It's an action movie. So put this first when they air it to catch people, you know, and say, hey, look at what this is. So I understand why they put it first. But, yeah, the whole sliding onto the plane thing, I was like, oh, what the heck's going on? How can they do this? Like, when I first aired, I was thinking, well, that is odd that they landed on, you know, on a plane. But if you watch it in correct order, it makes sense now.
At the same time, it's like you said, it's like very action oriented as well. And mm-hmm. of course, like we like to play clips throughout the show. You know, we get clips to sort of break up our little segments. It was really hard for me to find good, solid clips.
Yeah, I bet.
Play throughout the episode. So, yeah, it's just showing you exactly how much action oriented they are rather than character development or story progression. But, you know, it is as it is. You know, we're in the game and you have to survive 5 levels of the game, and pretty much the big prize is like a whole buttload of money.
Which sounds, I mean, when you look at the game, it's really just, it's like a deadly game of paintball, really. You know, it's like that's what you can do that today. You can actually play it, the game today. It's just that you're not going to die when you do it. It's very similar to those big paintball arenas that you can go to today.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I do love movies that have like dystopian future games in it. You know, mm-hmm. even like the old cheesy, like what was that Schwarzenegger one? Running Man.
Right.
You know, they're kind of big today in the teen market with movies like Hunger yeah. Games and Maze Runner and whatnot. So, yeah, I kind of like this idea of dystopian future games.
A lot of people in the Messages in Time talked about how there's this seems like the Running Man. You know, like a big tribute to the Running Man.
Sort of getting them into the game as well. Like where, you know, they bring up the points. Like our tourist says, oh, there's plenty of food and stuff in the plane. We'll just hang out here until we need to slide. Nope, we're going to heat up everything so you cannot stay
exactly.
in this location. You need to get out and into the game.
We do have an exposition extra, but it's totally appropriate, you know, because he's just the announcer. He gives them all the information they need. But it's like, well, yeah, okay, this is perfect because he's the announcer. He's explaining to the players. He's explaining to the people watching at home what the deal is. You know, so like the exposition extra is not like out of place in this one. Like if that was just a guy who came up and said all that stuff, then definitely it'd be another one of those terrible, you know, extras. But it works in this case.
A little bit cheesy maybe, but yeah.
Definitely a little cheesy, but that's Sliders is always a little bit cheesy. You know, there's always a little bit of cheese in there.
You know, we get a great moment with Remy here at the beginning because they walk past like a blown up truck.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes you think like someone's just going up and just blown up on them. So right. It's up to them to try and figure out whether or not it's safe to use. And we get this great bit of info from Remy that he was at some point in the Navy. And, right. you know, I can't figure out whether or not he was actually in the Navy proper or right. if indeed, like he says, he was on a USO tour.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And the whole thing about this is, you know, back in season one, in the episode Summer of Love, at the very end, they slide into this world that's abandoned and there's a big tidal wave coming. And Remy's like, guys, I can't swim, you know, but yet he was in the Navy, you know, it's like Navy, naval, water. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more of a USO tour thing, but he does like, he really does. He acts like he was in the Navy. Like he steps up.
That's what I mean. Like I got a bit confused, like whether or not he was in the Navy proper because he does say, you know, I took a couple of classes before we left on the USO tour. But yeah, it was just, it was a bit complicated. Like, I almost thought it was a good progression for his character to sort of set him up as having served in the armed forces at some point. That, right. That's kind of why we can build him up to sort of be this more solid character. And then, of course, we have Arturo, who gets shot in the face by a laser because they don't have bullets in the game. Well, I guess the contestants have bullets, but like everything that's trying to kill them is like these laser things. And so Arturo gets shot in the face with it and is immediately blinded. And he's going to be blind for the rest of the episode.
Until they slide and wraps everything up nice and neat.
Yeah. And it was a little off for me because towards the end of the episode, there's the woman who I'm pretty sure has a name. It's Nikki.
It's Nikki.
You don't really kind of find that out till the end.
Right, right, exactly.
But she gets shot with a laser and immediately dies. And I'm like, well, she didn't even get shot in the head. She kind of just got shot in the side and she died. Arturo took it to the face and only got was blinded from it.
Well, I went back to look at it because I was like, oh, that's right. She did get shot by the same beam or what appeared to be the same beam. So I looked at it, and when Arturo gets shot, so when Nikki gets shot, it's boom, hits her in the side, you know, and she dies. When Arturo gets shot, he was in the Jeep, and the beam came at him through the window of the Jeep.
Okay.
So I'm thinking that's probably why it's a little different. It didn't get through the glass or something, and it blinded him that way. I'm imagining that maybe the intention wasn't like that gun wasn't supposed to blind him. Supposed to kill him, but the glass somehow stopped it. It's super glass. It's super fiberglass.
I'll give it that.
But, you know, the whole thing with Arturo being blinded was, I mean, for me, I think this was the best part of the episode because his character is so arrogant normally, you know, and like he's just going to do everything on his own. And now he can't. And he struggles with trying to ask for help. Like, he doesn't want help. He wants to do it all by himself, even though he's, you know, now handicapped. It's like, no, I'm still going to do this on my own, but he can't. I think it was a great moment for his character.
I agree. And, you know, again, they're teaming up Arturo and Remy. Yeah, you're right. They get some of the best stuff in the episode. I think John Rhys Davies does a great job of playing Arturo as being blind. And the scene with the electrifying spiders, I thought was really, really strong.
I mean, my favorite part with that was when he tries to, you know, get away from Remy. He's like, you know, just leave me alone. You go, come back for me later. And Arturo starts going off on his own and he realizes he can't. And like, you know, he has his breakdown, you know, like his head is down and he's like, you know, well, come on, man, help me, you know? Mm-hmm. And Remy doesn't respond right away. And he's like, you know, please, you know, he is a genuine, like, heartfelt please, like, all right, I'm broken, just help me, you know?
Yeah,
I was like intense. I was like, that's good, that's right there, that's why he needs to always be in every single episode of Sliders.
Yeah, absolutely. It is, it's it's definitely one of the best acted scenes in the whole series, you know. And then as we go along, we kind of find out more about the game. Honestly, it doesn't seem like it's too dangerous. I mean, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's just like there was like 25 teams in total. So you're talking about, if you're talking like 3 to 4 people per team, you're talking about 75 to 90 people maybe. And a lot of them are just wiped out like by the time they get to level 2. So, and it seems that the sliders are able to avoid a lot of the danger a lot of the time.
Without any training.
Yeah, exactly. They weren't even prepared to be in the game. There were people who seemed had to go through like semifinals and stuff. Like Nikki's talking later. Like there were actually like stuff you need to do to actually get into the game proper.
Yeah.
So when they're actually in there and they manage to get around all the laser garden sprinklers and the robot dogs and the electric spiders, like, yeah, they really get through it. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say it was easy for them, but, you know, it doesn't seem like it would have been as dangerous as it could have been. And it's like you were saying in like the stuff that they changed, they did want to do a lot more. What they did come up with was good. Like I said, I really enjoyed the electric spiders. I did think the hopscotch booby trap was a little strange.
It was just like, here they are in this life or death situation. And suddenly Wade goes like ADD and like, oh, look, hopscotch. I want to play. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It's like, what? It seems so like if you're in a life or death situation and you see a hopscotch, you know, thing drawn on the ground, you don't just start playing hopscotch.
I understand like it was operated by pressure sensitivity, right? That's why he sets right. up the whole thing with the rock so they can run away and get away just in time before it goes off.
I like that.
Yeah, but it didn't go off straight away.
Right.
Like she had to like do a whole run down the hopscotch and then come back before it actually triggered. So I'm like, is it some sort of like thing like where you actually have to do the hopscotch before it works?
I'm wondering if it was like if you were on it for a certain amount of time, you know, like if you were actually pressing the hopscotch, you know, markers for like more than just like a second or two, it wouldn't activate. When she is finally, you know, standing there and it's been activated and Quinn puts the rocks on there, they're able to run down the alleyway and around the corner before it activates. It's like there's a delay. I can't help but think there was a better way for them to come upon that trap rather than just being on a hopscotch thing that Wade just wants to try in the middle of a war, basically. You know, it just seems out of character.
Yeah. Well, it did serve as a good means of sort of having this nice conversation between Wade and Quinn, sort of reestablishing them more as really close friends rather than, you know, as we've been saying for the last two seasons, the Quaid that we kind of saw there, you know?
Right.
And it's the whole thing about like, you know, you would tell me if I had spinach in my teeth or something like that, you know? And it ends with him saying, well, how's my breath? You know, I thought that was quite good, like a reset up of the character's relationship. And then there's a reason why in the last episode we did a dramatic reading. Is because here we get the first, I guess, official mention of the 29 years between slides. Well, he says 29 years. He doesn't say 29.7, but he does say 29 years.
Exactly. They team up with this other player, which, you know, you said you couldn't remember her name, and I didn't know what her name was either. You know, like I was watching the episode, I'm like, the heck is her name? Because I'm taking notes and I'm like, what do I call this person? I had no idea. I actually had to look it up on IMDb to find out what her name was, because I was like, does she even have a name? Like, they never named her until the very, very end. I'm like, well, that's weird. They could have just thrown a line in there. But yeah, they're talking with her, and that's when it comes up that if we don't make this slide, you know, then we're going to be stuck here for 29 years. As they were talking with her, they give the history of this place, which it just seems really ridiculous to me that they were having a civil war for years, and so they decide to ban all sports, you know, or they banned all sports during the civil war, or they banned sports so a civil war happened. For whatever reason, they banned all sports, you know, which is just odd. Does that mean like Little League is out, you know, like can you not play kids soccer? Is that also, you know, banned? Are all sports of any kind banned? It seemed odd. And then they're like, but to make up for it, we're going to have this game that the government made up where you guys are going to go in and try to stay alive. You know, it was like, I don't know. It just seemed like an odd alt history to me. They really missed a chance here with this alt history and this world to like make a social commentary like they usually do. You know, they usually have some kind of twist on it, and they're commenting on how this world has done something and how it would be better if they did it this way, or, you know, they make a point. But this one, they didn't make any point of this. There was like a throwaway line, I think, about that Arturo said something about, you know, they probably hit each other with bats in baseball here or something like that. It was just a real quick line that they threw away. But I was just like, there's so much more that could have been done with this type of world where all sports have been, you know, taken away and the main form of entertainment is watching people die. That could have been explored more, but then it wouldn't have been such an action-packed episode.
Yeah, really. They haven't done anything to change this world. But the interesting thing is that this game is being televised. I mean, there's cameras everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody who's watching the game knows very well who these people are. You know, the sliders often look up at the cameras and say, hey, we never signed up for the game. Get us out of here. And then at the end, after they win you know, they get up and they put Nikki's medallion in the computer there. They slide like straight afterwards.
Yeah.
Did the whole world see that?
Yeah, I would assume so because they're everywhere and they're the winners. So presumably, you know, for a good conclusion, the camera would be focused on them.
But yeah, that's, you know, it's just a straight up ending and nothing changed, but they survived the game. And Nikki's family and her team's families are all going to get money.
There was nothing in her that, like, intrigued me, that made me want to know more about her. And, like, even her acting, the girl who played Nikki, was not that great. It was very just stiff. You know, that's how she felt to me. Just like not the best delivery and just not the best character overall. Not very well-rounded at all.
She was set up at the beginning, but didn't really even come into it proper until the very end. All in all, yeah, the action was pretty good. A couple of great character moments. So, yeah, it was a fine episode, I think.
If you're into action, if you're into the action part of Sliders, then this was a good episode. If you were into, like, the alt history, the, you know, trying to, like, make things right, it definitely was lacking for me. Like, you know, as a season opener for new people, like new viewers, it would have been great, I think, because it would have been, you know, it's very easy to get into this episode. It's just like an action movie that you might watch, you know, on the big screen. But for people who had been following Sliders and getting used to the alt history and the little twists and turns that they put in there, it was a little bit, I don't know, for me, it was a little lacking.
You know something? For somebody with so much education, there are moments when you aren't very smart at all.
Spare me your insight, sir.
No, I figure that this is the first time in your life that you may have to depend on somebody else, and I can't believe that you would rather die than do that. Man, don't you know that we need your help, too?
Very well. Since you will not leave me, sir, I will leave you.
I wouldn't do that, Professor.
I do not want to do this. Why don't you stand there, man? Come and help me. Please.
All right, well, let's get into some messages in time.
All right, so starting off with rules of the game. People back in 96 were saying, was this 96 or was 97?
This was the end of 96, yeah.
End of 96. So they were saying, so the plane was fake, but did everyone on it, the actual players, did they know it was fake? And if they, the players knew it was fake, why were they all freaking out and putting on the masks when the plane was, like, you know, going, you know, quote, going down? Because they all freaked out and they were, like, putting on the masks and, like, what's going on? But did they all know it was fake?
I guess at the same time, they could know that they're on TV, so they're just playing it for the cameras.
Playing it up, maybe. Yeah, maybe. They were asking, like, how do you get to the next level in this game? Because it wasn't just, like, in a specific location, it seemed. You know, like, so they said maybe it's because maybe the number of people that you've killed, the number of androids or whatever, you know, it didn't seem to be, like, a specific location that indicated you were on level 2 or level 3 or level 4 or level 5.
Yeah, they make a good point, really.
They said, you know what? They should have just tried shooting the sprinklers rather than, you know, going across the ground, sticking a pen in there. You know, like, why not just shoot it? Shoot it! You know? That ends it right there. And they also said when the sliders got separated, did they ever watch, like, an action movie and just, like, you know, shoot the doorknob and the lock? And then they could have opened the door and they would have been reunited. You know? It's like, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
you know?
Smack the handle,
like, oh,
off.
Oh, no. Yeah. It's like, we are blocked by this wooden door. All right, we'll meet up later. Bye. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, we have guns. We've got guns here. They also said, how did the Sliders not get thrown out of the game? Because they weren't an official team. They said there were 25 teams in the, you know, in the game, but then the Sliders just appear. So technically there's 26 and they're not registered or whatever. Why did they leave them in there?
Yeah, they don't have a medallion to put in at the end.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if they win, they can't win.
People said, well, maybe they just figured, you know, it's good for ratings, you know, apparently on this world, since this game is so popular, maybe they played that up and say, we have some some special guests that we didn't know, or, you know, let's focus on them now.
Yeah, I guess we didn't actually see the televised event, like how it was being presented to the public.
Exactly. We also had, like I said earlier, they said this was a big episode for a tribute to the Running Man.
Right.
Very similar. And then a couple people, which of course I agreed on already, I said, they didn't like the new theme music. They liked the old theme music, which I do too. The new one's okay. It is very catchy. There is like a recognizable melody or theme, I guess, in it. Whereas the previous two seasons, it was more just like music. There was no catchy little hook or riff.
I kind of like the music for every season.
First season music is what I like the best. It had like sound effects of the timer in there. There was a lot of like if you just listen to the music, because I went back and I listened to season one, season two, season three. When I read this message in time, when I read that, I was like, well, let me go back and check and re-listen to them. And like listening to them all, the second season was a bit cheesy because they did the whole voiceover with, what about a world where the Russians took over America?
Yeah. You know?
It was a little cheesy for me. The music was okay underneath it. And then this one here, it wasn't bad, but there's a definite hook in there. There's definite something that you can like latch onto and sort of like hum along with. The first season was just a lot of, it didn't feel like there was any hooks in there. It was just a lot of like music, you know, nothing recognizable. And just, there were some sound effects in there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like that first season.
Yeah, and you're right. By the third season, they've kind of tightened up that monologue a little bit just to sort of shoot out the basics, and then we're on.
So that's it for Messages in Time for that episode. There wasn't a lot. So we go to Messages in Time for Double Cross, and people were wondering, now that we've seen a female Quinn, are we going to see a male Wade, a female professor, and so on like that, which obviously we didn't. Like I said, I thought the idea was odd to have a female Quinn. But some people were like, well, maybe we'll see a male Wade now, you know, and then they can fall in love and whatnot. I'm glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
They said with this episode, and this is what I had mentioned earlier, you know, about how it seems like Protonix has like all this water and they're just wasting it with these fountains. They said, you know what, this is kind of like a commentary, like a political statement here that, you know, the rich people, the people who have money, have as much as they want. They can get all the energy they want. They can have all the water they want, the food that they want. It's like the poor, you know, only get what the poor and the middle class, you know, can get whatever they can afford, which is really not much. So they said, this is kind of like, you know, a good commentary on here. They didn't like the commentary. They didn't like the idea that they were doing that for some reason. I actually like it. You know, I like the idea that like Monique, who's rich, you know, can get all this lavish stuff, and she's driving a real car.
Yeah, it's funny that she became rich because her father invented the paperless toilet, so something that's right. good for the environment, but yet mm-hmm. they have like a nice lush estate with a pool, and like you said, she's driving an actual car. And
it wasn't gas, like $400 a gallon or something like that. It was like way expensive. So, you know, like for whatever reason, this person who posted this and other people had commented on it, they just didn't like that commentary. And I thought, well, this is what Sliders has always kind of done. You know, they've kind of done this type of commentary, which that's what I like. That's why Rules of the Game sort of fell for me, because there wasn't any of that in there. Someone else wondered at the very end of the episode, when Logan shoots the gun, why was the bullet pulled back into the vortex? You know, if it was so powerful earlier to almost have pulled Logan and Quinn into it when she activated it by accident, why was it pulling the bullet but not like the other Sliders and not everything around them? You know, because it would seem like that would be pretty powerful to pull a bullet back that's just been shot out, such a great force.
Yeah,
you know, but yet the Sliders are standing there like nothing's going on. And after this long thread, they eventually reasoned that it must have something to do with like Quinn's original timer. when he developed the timer, he would activate it, send something through, and it would be pulled back, you know, like automatically. And even, you know, that when he was originally testing the vortex, he was pulled back into it. He didn't jump into it. He was forced back into it by the timer. So they said maybe, you know, the when you have this original timer set like it was, you activate it, and when your time's up, you just get pulled back through no matter what, and anything from that dimension that you were from has to be pulled back too. So the bullet, even though it's going forward with great force towards Wade, it belongs in the other dimension, and the vortex opens, and it wants to reclaim whatever came from it originally. So it's pulling it back against, you know, the force.
Interesting theory.
It is an interesting theory. I thought, well, that's pretty good, actually. I mean, it doesn't come into play much because our sliders don't work with that original timer anymore. They slide, you know, when the timer says it's time to go, and they have to go in to the vortex. They don't get pulled back. They don't get retrieved, basically.
Yeah.
So it was a neat, you know, it was a neat a way to explain that, you know, how, why the bullet got pulled back. They said heat signatures are kind of a weird way to identify people. Because what if someone is sick and they have a fever? You know, their heat signature is going to be different. It's going to be, you know, greater. So they said, why not do DNA? That's, you know, retina scans and things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, you could argue that they did it so they could say that, you know, Logan is is Quinn. But you could do the same thing with fingerprint.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, thinking about that, like, what if, like, I mean, I like the idea. Like I said, I thought it was weird, but I think it's a neat idea that she was him. But did they need to have that in there? The episode probably would have been fine if they hadn't revealed that she was him. You know, it adds another level to it. But did we really need that little bit in there?
Yeah, she could have just been evil.
Yeah, she could have been just an evil person. And as we know, Quinn gets with like every woman that he comes across, you know? So, you know, being seduced by her would not have been a big deal, you know? Like she didn't need to know exactly what he was thinking in order for them to, you know, get it on or whatever.
Still icky. Like, ugh, I can't believe she's tried to seduce him. Like, what? Why?
Somewhere out there, there's a female Corey, and she's looking for you, man. She's going to slide into this dimension one day, and you're going to just have an instant connection, and then you're going to find out. All right. Anyway, let's see. What else? They, like we said earlier, the Remy subplot is reminiscent of the weaker sex. And like you said here, the viewers back then felt that this was a Quinn and Logan. It was kind of a incestuous, you know, incestuous feel to it. It was a little strange for them, but they liked the idea of Logan, and the possibilities of what could be with Logan are just amazingly great. You know, of course they don't ever follow up on it. So it's too bad. But, you know, just like we thought, you know, Logan's a good character. It would have been great to have seen her again.
Yeah.
They said, with the 400-mile radius, couldn't they possibly now land in the ocean?
Hmm.
Which, yeah, because a radius is not like a straight line. It's a circular, you know? So 400-mile radius, they could end up out there in the ocean.
Well, I'm pretty sure there's an episode that's going to come. It might be this season. Could be next season. When they do land in the ocean, I'm sure of it.
Okay, all right. And then finally, they say, well, looks like Quinn got a haircut and Arturo needs one. I agree.
Okay, so we have like the tiniest little bit of messages from Earth Prime here from our good friend, Russian cabbie lottery fan, and he says he's enjoyed the last two episodes. And he posted that over at the Slidersir TV forum. So thank you, Russian cabbie lottery fan. We are glad that you're listening.
It's like that old commercial, you know, the hair club, you know, I'm not just the owner. I'm also, you know, I'm also a user of the hair club. I forget how that goes, but you know, like I do the episode here, but I listen to it as well. It's very, you know, I'm going to say it's very entertaining. Those two guys on the Sliders Rewatch podcast. Those guys are great. No, yeah. I mean, I listen to it when it comes out. I listen to it, you know, and I was at the gym on Monday when it came out. And I put it on. I'm listening to it and I'm working out. I'm like, oh, this is nice. These guys are funny. I like it.
I love tuning in to hear those guys talking about that Quaid.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. No, it's awesome to have you guys listening, and we love when you guys give us feedback, so thank you. All right, so continuing on next week with season 3, the next two episodes we'll be discussing are Dead Man Sliding, followed by Electric Twister Acid Test.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking forward to that. Maybe another Stand By Me alum might be showing up, I think.
Yeah, maybe.
Won't give it away.
Oh, anyway, that is it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. You can keep up with listener interaction by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast and follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod. You can also visit our webpage at rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com, which has some of our favorite links there, such as Dimensions of Continuity for those lost and found scenes, earthprime.com, and, of course, the active forum over at sliders.tv.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and just send it on over to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the episode, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Always very helpful in building up our listenership and listener interaction. Okay, great to, you know, be kicking off season 3 with this great discussion there, Tom. So time to get out of here. So until next time, it's a good day to die. Well, that's just wonderful.
We got a slide.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code, Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.